Aaron.
Boy, we should have fun today. What we've got is two full committee days here today and Thursday, and we're looking at election stuff. Election reform is the formal title, but election stuff. And I really have, I think we have three objectives. Number one is we want to make sure that we wouldn't be a Florida if we had the same opportunity. I don't know whether we would or not, but hopefully by close of business Thursday we'll know those things. And we want everybody's ideas on if the process should be simplified, make it administratively simpler to accomplish. What are some really good ideas out there that we need to be doing as a legislature? If there are, then we'll just try and get them done. And a third, if there's something out there in the fraud arena, you know, we don't want to be another Chicago either, where we have a bunch of dead people voting. If there's something that we need to do to cut down on that or to eliminate that if possible, then we want to know about it and try and get that done. So we've got the informational hearing set up with a bunch of different really qualified people to lead us through that. But first we'll start off with the Secretary of State. Is it Scott? Okay. You get to lead this thing off, and I think we'll hear, you know, what are the rules today, the laws today, and maybe some examples of some complaints perhaps that have come to your office. Is that what we think we're going to get?
Well, Chair, you'll get whatever you want. I can give you.
How about the truth?
For the record, my name is Scott Tye. I'm the operations manager for the Elections Division, Secretary of State's office. And I was asked to give you a brief overview of the complaint process generally and then focus in on the possibility of surrendering your ballot or voluntarily handing your ballot to somebody else, and then if that person doesn't drop your ballot in the mailbox or the drop site, what happens? So basically, a quick overview of the complaint process. Our office generally will receive a wide variety of complaints, ranging from complaints about school bond levy brochures or special district brochures, advocating the passage of a measure, to accusations of people voting twice or maybe even more times. And other instances would be somebody may be accused of lying in a voter's pamphlet, true or not true. So we have a wide range of different types of complaints that may come into our office. In the 1999-2000 election cycle, we had 634 complaints filed in our office. Of those, 442 were complaints filed in the year 2000, which would encompass the May primary and the November general election. Generally, we do not receive any complaints about voting twice or signatures not matching from citizens. They're generally referrals from the county clerks regarding actual deposit ballots and improprieties that may occur with the casting of a ballot. And for the 2000 general election, we had 53 referrals of people that possibly have voted twice and 139 referrals where the signatures did not match the return identification envelope when compared with the voter registration card. In the 8 years I've been with the Elections Division, we have never had a reported case of somebody that actually provided their ballot, if it was an absentee ballot or a vote-by-mail ballot, where they subsequently contacted the county clerk and found out that their ballot had not been deposited or received by the county clerk. It hasn't happened yet, and we have no record, at least at the Elections Division, of a complaint of that nature. Those cases where we get a referral where that somebody has voted twice, that would be considered a Class C felony if we were able to pursue that case and in fact the person voted intentionally to voted twice and we took them to court and successfully prosecuted that person. Many of these cases, the difficulty is the majority are not prosecutable because the person that violates the, you know, voting twice laws would normally have to do it with criminal intent. By and large, a number of the people that do wind up the number of the cases that are referred to our office where they voted twice were instances where somebody filled out their ballot, they signed it, and then they were really, you know, they found out or they were perceived that they weren't going to be able to get their ballot in the mail in time to reach the county clerk's office. So they drove to the county clerk's, asked for a replacement ballot, cast that ballot, and then their first original ballot wound up arriving at the county clerk's office. Or you may have a situation where somebody left their ballot at home and went to work, and then one spouse or the other or a friend or roommate or whatever sees the ballot and goes, oh, geez, I wonder if my husband or wife forgot their ballot and dropped it in the mailbox. In the meantime, their husband or wife went and got a replacement ballot because they forgot it at home and were worried that the ballot wouldn't be deposited at the drop site in time. So we get a lot of and all sorts of variations like that.
Excuse me, Scott.
Pardon?
Does your office buy bridges?
Chair Harper, we haven't had that in our budget recently, but no.
Because I got a couple that I think you'd probably like to buy.
Chair Harper, we're always interested in having referrals through our office. If, in fact, there are cases where somebody may have voted twice, and we'll investigate them.
Hang on a second, Lee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When does this thing get, you investigate, when does it get to the DA or the...
Oh, okay.
Or?
Yeah, I should go back a bit. When we receive the complaint, whether it's a criminal nature or civil in nature, we'll evaluate the complaint and the facts as the complainant reported to us, and we require all complaints be in writing. Once we evaluated the facts, generally what we do is we'll send an inquiry letter we'll send an acknowledgement letter to the person that filed the complaint and to those persons that are subject to the complaint that a complaint has been received in our office. Step two would be we evaluate the complaint and we'll generate an inquiry letter asking a number of questions related to that complaint, and we allow the person or persons a chance to respond to the complaint.
And then they say the dog ate it. And they're okay.
Or yeah, whatever.
Okay.
And then we basically have to, you know, if it's civil in nature, we'll evaluate those those facts. Then we generally will consult with our representative from the Attorney General's office, and then make a determination within the Elections Division. On a complaint that may be criminal in nature, we'll send out a determination letter, and if we suspect that there has been a violation, then we'll refer that case over to the Attorney General's office, and then the Criminal Justice Division then investigates the case. So once we refer a complaint that may be criminal in nature to the Attorney General's office, then it's in their bailiwick to investigate. Then after they complete their investigation, they'll report to us and recommend whether we should go ahead with a prosecution or find the case, that there's no violation.
How many of these are we doing out of this 139 that have gone through that?
Well, of the 53 voted twice cases,
okay.
We've sent over two for prosecution out of 53.
Two out of 53.
Correct.
Okay. Senator Beyer, well, you kind of got to what I was talking about. I'm assuming that the 53 and 139, the referrals, were two ballots. They did not get counted then. They obviously were caught by the clerks, so they're pulled out of the stream.
Correct. If you return two ballots in a vote-by-mail election, neither ballot will be counted.
Neither ballot.
Correct. Now the difference between the voting twice and the signatures do not match is, well, obviously, in the first instance, the county clerk receives two ballots back from the voter. On a signature that does not match, generally it'll be one ballot, and then when they compare the signature to the voter registration card, the signatures do not match. And then they'll refer those to us.
And the
again, those aren't counted either.
The signature, I'm sorry, are you finished?
Part was that how you mentioned a couple of referrals in recent history. How many people have actually been prosecuted?
Chair Harper, Senator Beyer, since the 95 election, one, eight, there have been eight people we referred over that were convicted.
Were convicted?
Yes.
Eight convictions. Okay. Senator Brown.
Thank you. On the signature of not matching, my experience was that my county clerk called me to say, or someone from the office called to say, the signature doesn't match. Will you come down and verify signature and ID? Do the counties handle it differently? Does everybody do it the same?
Okay. Chair Harper, Senator Brown, everybody does it the same. It's part of our vote-by-mail procedures, and it's contained within the Secretary of State's directive.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Then I had the opportunity to make sure that it was my ballot and that my signature, it was my signature. Is everybody then statewide given that opportunity so those ballots aren't thrown out automatically?
Yes. Chair Harper, Senator Brown, yes. All county clerks will try and make a contact with the voter where the signatures do not match. And generally, if it gets close to the election, they'll, in fact, make phone calls and provide that voter an opportunity to come down and verify that their signature, that they are the qualified voter of that ballot. However, if you're not able to make contact, then that ballot will not be counted.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I was surprised. I guess I was actually surprised and pleased to get the phone call from my county elections office when my signature had changed over a four-year period, and the signature they had on file was a little bit different. So they were reviewing, in Multnomah County, they were reviewing them very, very carefully. And the elections clerk was actually embarrassed when she knew it was me, but I was very pleased that they were checking them that carefully. Thanks.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These folks who are accused of voting twice, I assume these are the ones that register under the same name and same address?
Chair Harper, Senator Miller, generally that is the case, but not always. If we do have a clerk that detects that that the signature is exactly the same, though different names, they'll refer it to our office for investigation. It's rare, though.
It's rare that it's referred to you, or
it's rare that we would get a referral where the signatures are different, or I should say different names but the same handwriting.
Well, could you refresh for me, and maybe I don't know whether you're going to get into this or not, but what all is on that form for registration besides your name and address? And
okay, Chair Harper, Senator Miller, the voter registration card has a check box where it asks you, are you a U.S. citizen? And then it'll have your name, residence address, date of birth, and then just above the signature where you sign it, it has, again, you're a U.S. citizen. I'm a resident of the county of the state of Oregon. There's two other things. I'm trying to remember what it says. And then you check off your political party affiliation. Off the top of my head, I can't think of it.
Do you record that information, or do you cross-check and make sure that that person actually exists?
Chair Harper, Senator Miller, well, generally the county clerks will scan in the voter registration card into their data, their files. If they don't have a scan process, then they'd record those.
Okay.
Record the files. Counties have, by cross-checking, you mean within each county or county to county?
We've got that. Within the county, I guess.
We've got a bunch of clerks coming up.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
So,
well, that might be something that maybe we'll address is how it seems to me rather easy just to sign up under a fictitious name and participate.
Okay. Chair Harper, Senator Miller, to finish up, The other two bullets I couldn't remember was you swear that you're over 18 and you told the truth on your registration. And then there's a warning below your signature box that says if you sign the card and know it to be false, you can be convicted of and fined up to $100,000 and or jail up to 5 years.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Brown.
A follow-up question. Would a statewide voter database solve the multiple registration problem or help solve the multiple registration problem?
Chair Harper, Senator Brown, I believe that with a statewide real-time centralized voter registration system, it would help solve the problem. I don't know if you could totally eliminate it, but it would allow to be able to detect people that would register in more than one county and allow the clerks to also cross-check when they're checking signatures during the signature verification process during the election, when people update or move and re-register.
Good. Is that last chance before we leave?
I was going to say that, responding to that last question, that would be true if they were using the same name. But if you'd had a female who was married and chose to adopt her spouse's name, you wouldn't necessarily pick that up. If they chose to sign it and use different initials or chose to use their middle name and change, you wouldn't necessarily pick that up unless they say they just moved.
Right. Chair Harper, Senator Byer, that is true.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate that. Mr. Stern, Yamhill County Clerk.
The Dean of the Clerks.
Slide presentation on the clerk's process and difficulties in discerning voter intent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so that's what I'm going to show you. Well, I don't know if that's really what's going to be there, but we're going to talk about some issues relating voter intent and show you some examples from this election of ballots that were overvoted as far as the computer's concerned, or undervoted as far as the computer's concerned, and how you're going to see, can you tell the voter intent? We're going to look at three different types of ballot counting systems, punch cards, and two types of optical scan. But first, I'd like to point out that we have a number of county clerks in the audience today. This is the last day of our midwinter conference for county clerks, and so we have quite a number of elections officials and clerks in the audience today. Several are going to testify before you, just following me. I'd like to respond also to some of the questions that were raised. Senator Brown talked about the signature match process and how we contact those people. And one of the big concerns we have is the non-respondent person. And I mean, we've maybe sent them a letter. We may even have called them on election day. But how do we deal with that non-respondent? The Secretary of State may also go through this notification, second request for information, more information. How do we deal with those non-respondents? And so in our county, then we send them a final notice that would inactivate those voters as saying, we have no evidence you're there. And Senator Miller, I believe, raised the question about when a person registers, how do you know they're out there? We send a non-forwardable piece of mail to them called a memorandum card. And it's not forwardable. If it comes back to us, again, we go through that process of giving a notice that we're inactivating and giving cancellation to try to. And the reality, we get those back because probably for a number of reasons. One, they may not be there, may not be a valid address, or we have some segments of our society are highly mobile, and they don't stay in one place long enough to get a mail piece to them.
Just a moment.
Yes.
The situation I was thinking of is if you had a single person creating different identities sitting in that household to which your memorandums are sent, so they receive it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, the post office has been very cooperative in looking. That may be a valid address, but there may not be the people at that address, and it would bounce back to us. Now, is it foolproof? I don't know if anything is, but it has been very effective. I think every clerk can testify they get some of those back from every registration run that they run those memorandum cards. And again, they could be from a number of different reasons why they're bouncing back non-deliverable. One other question came up over the cross-checking of ballots and names. If a person updates their registration in that window of time, after the 20th day and election day, the counties always verify that with where they're coming, the county they're moving from, before that ballot's counted. And one of the fines from that in this election is that we had a voter that attempted to vote in both Washington and Yamhill County. We determined that when we received notice from Washington County that they had registered up there. We indicated in our voter registration system that this person moved. His ballot came back to us. And this occurred after we'd mailed that first set of ballots. So then when his ballot came back to us, then we, after the election, we called Washington County and said, hey, we got a ballot from this guy. Did he vote up there? Yes, he did. They sent us the voter history information from them. We forwarded it all to the Secretary of State for further investigation and possible prosecution. So we have some cross-checking across county lines. We do some cross-checking where we give our databases to, submit it to a private vendor to run cross-checks based on name, birth date, and all those, try to find matches. And then we go through those and work those for find duplicate registrations. So we're doing some efforts now. The central system is just a tool to make that more convenient and more immediate. And then lastly, a question dealt with, I think Senator Beyer raised, is, but if a person registered in multiple names, then what would you do even in a central system? And I think the biggest issue that we're going to be discussing, should this body choose to provide the Secretary of State with the necessary funds to move forward with a central system, is the issue of a voter ID number. And this has to be something the voter already has that you reuse, so that no matter where you register in Oregon and how many times you register in Oregon, we're asking for that ID number. And that's going to be quite a topic of discussion of what that should be. But those states that are successful with a central system have a single type of voter ID number already possessed by the registrant that they must use, and then suddenly the name is not the issue anymore because you're tying everything to the voter ID number. Now to go to what I wanted to talk about, but I did want to answer your questions because these are important topics that we've talked about, we've kind of wrestled with, and we will continue to work with this body and amongst ourselves to try to come to some good resolution to some of these issues. I think Oregon can be very proud of its system, and I'd like to show you some reasons why I think so. And one of the things that in this discussion is, I'd like to point out four things why Florida, the same circumstances would be different in Oregon that would be in Florida. The first reason I think it's different is that Florida has a 7-day window in which to do recounts and certification. Oregon has 20 days in which to certify and then consider recounts. And that's a significant difference. It allows us to do some inspections of the ballot that are not done in Florida. Secondly, our whole recount, as I've already mentioned that, occurs after certification. So we have a single number we're working toward in our recount process. Florida was doing recounts and they didn't even have all the ballots. If we're thinking about, why would we do that? But that was Florida's lawsuit. And so those are tools you have given us in the past that has helped us know that we would not be in the same situation. We may have the same scrutiny, and we may have the same number of lawyers in town, but we wouldn't necessarily have some of the same issues. Also, the postmarks, that was a contentious issue. And you had that before, and you made the decision not to accept postmarks. In my opinion, a wise decision. I think you should look at some of the issues in Florida, you agree. And then we use 4-member boards rather than 3. Remember that in Florida, the issues was in a Democratic county, you had 2 Democrats and a Republican, and Republicans. In Oregon, we use 4-member boards. And I think this is a policy decision that you have made that have made our job better to withstand that kind of scrutiny. And we're not the only ones that believe that. How many of you are aware of the magazine called The Hill? It's produced
for Congress, about Congress, and it's read by all the denizens of the banks of the public. And they're saying that if you want to avoid a Florida, look at Oregon. And those of us that go to national events will say that the interest in how Oregon conducts elections has never been higher. I think the folks at the Secretary of State's Congress will tell you that. When I go to my national conventions, do elections, that is the reality. Is that never before we had the kind of interest in how we do elections. Now, one of the things that we share with Florida...
It's modestly out of focus, if you wouldn't mind. Yes. I know you guys...
The only way I'm getting focus is at the lower end of the screen. If I go higher, it goes out of focus. And I have not been successful in
okay.
getting it to go any better. I'm sorry.
All right, you'll have to talk to it then.
That's pretty annoying.
Oregon law provides that any vote from which it is impossible to determine the elector's choice for office or major shall not be counted. This is the issue of voter intent. Hot topic for us, right? Well, it would be a hot topic here, too, because they have the same issue. Can you determine the voter's intent? And so we have to address that. So I brought some examples, and you want to try to get better focus today?
Get it in the lights.
So that
will help.
But anyway, this is down as far as this goes, and if you go up, it gets worse. As you can see from the presidential votes over here, this voter loves presidents. Every one of them. But he doesn't love them all the same. Can you determine voter intent from this ballot?
No, and I wouldn't try.
Okay. So this... The votes for this race under Oregon law should not be counted, right? And we would treat this as an overvote. This would be counted as a genuine overvote. Okay.
You know, dozing out there with all you clerks that stayed up late last night.
Anyway, if you'll notice right in this area, there's... right? That's where somebody tried to erase their choices. And I just wish, if I get down here so you get some focus, and I don't know if you can see it way down there good. But somebody tried to do an erasure. To the computer, that's an overvote. Can you determine voter intent? I think that a board of four reasonable people can find three on that board and determine the voter intent. But you can see that to the computer's optical eye, it sees dark in there, and therefore that is an overvote. These folks were a little more diligent in their erasure. Okay. Now we're looking at optical scan now. You know, punch cards have had a lot of scrutiny over overvotes, undervotes, and that. But in optical scan, it's so much more visual to the voter, you'll actually find more often them writing notes to us and other comments. But you may not be pleased to see. But you can see now that the one up there for county commissioner, where they're choosing between Ted Lopazinski and Leslie Lewis, can you determine intent? And then the lower one is probably a little easier to determine an intent. But again, to the computer, both of those are overvotes.
So if you get three out of four for each one of those races, that's you'll count or not, okay.
This one here, again, Sarah, you've been erasing parts of the arrow. This, again, it may be very difficult to determine the intent because you don't see any good clear markings of yes or no. How the boards actually handle these, I don't know, because it's a decision of three out of the four persons sitting on the board. I Okay, this is the other style of optical scan used in Oregon. And again, we have people would appear not to always follow instructions. They're circling things as well as stealing the ovals. And then you go to the state judiciary and you determine the intent of that vote.
Yeah.
Okay. But again, as an example on the other style of optical scan. Punch cards. You see, as you go down that far column, you see the little black holes that have been punched out, and you see two together, but it's a yes and no environment. Okay? Can you determine from that? So the computer, we got an overvote, got two holes punched, both yes and no. But can you determine the intent of the voter in that punch card environment? That's the question the boards have to answer. This one here, if you could read this over here, and it's not real legible even when you have good light and good focus, is that it says, I punched number 88 by mistake. Now, those of you who are not used to punch card ballots need to know that there's a write-in stub at the top end where you could write in candidates. And this is a comment that they put in on that write-in stub. Question the board has to face is, do you determine intent of the voter? Yeah, I think it's right side up. You can help with it. Okay, here's a ballot. The computer said it never got voted at all. But can you determine the intent of this ballot? And this is why it's so critical that Oregon has the time in which to do inspections of the ballots that Florida does not allow for. That we do actual manual inspections. And in the case of a recount, we do manual recounts. Here's one that some of you may enjoy and others may not. It says, voting straight, dim ticket. There's not a punch anywhere on this ballot. And I'm sure the senator from Lane County does not recognize the handwriting. Anyway, this is going a straight damn ballot, but there's not a punch. Can you determine the intent of the voter? Here's one that there's no instructions on the write-in stuff, and if the ballot has not a single punch on it anymore. You always ask yourself, why does somebody go to the effort of returning this ballot? And I'll tell you why. I don't know. Now, I don't know if this person just freshly moved from a county that has optical scans or punch card, but you can see they chose to mark their ballot with a pen rather than punch anything out. And this is their only selection, and it's for president. Okay? Again, give me the intent. Okay. Again, here is another one. Obviously, the voter has a hard time following the idea of completing the L. And they're making their selections, however. This one, perhaps, is a little more difficult to determine intent. And the majors down here in this bottom corner, first, again, they don't know how to complete the arrow. But down the corner, it appears to me, I don't know how the board decided this, that someone may have changed their mind and initialed it. That's what it appears to me. But again, three votes out of four is going to make a decision. Now, if you want to know how they read, you know, Now, as you go to optical scan, we see more of this than we have in the room. But punch cards still see a lot of that in the write-in stub area of making comments. But as we make ballots more and more user-friendly and visible, we begin to see more of those types of comments. And then lastly, here's one where, again, voters are would appear maybe to be changing their minds and end up not being. But again, it's a decision of 3 out of 4 votes of the election board sitting there looking at that to make a determination. Anyway, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'll be around later, too, if you want to hold those off to later.
Well, come on back for sit down, take a break. These four-person boards, do we get into the partisanship that we got into in Florida, or are they split, or how are
yes.
they selected?
They cannot be all of the same party. We try to get them balanced. Occasionally, may have a board that may have a non-affiliated voter on, but no more than 2 of the same party.
So that's a rule somebody that, rules someplace. That's statute.
You wrote it in statute.
We are so smart.
Yes, you are. And that's why the nation's looking at Oregon, because we have done
interesting
well at some of the rules that we've laid out in law that enables us to respond to the kind of scrutiny differently than Florida did.
Now, do you? We're going to get a formal report Thursday.
That's correct.
In that, are you going to tell us what you want us to be doing, legislature? Is that all in the report? Do you have something else you want to add now, or...?
That'll be in the report. I think you'll notice that it'll be in 4 sections. The first 2 sections, about half the bullets are saying, here's some things we need to be doing better, different, more progressive. And not all of the things in the report that we need to be doing require legislation. And we've talked about that today, that there's some things we can progressively begin doing now. And we're talking about that. We've got a group of clerks that are going to begin working on that this right away on that. Then there'll be the next 2 groups, 2 classifications, I think, in every bullet. They're saying, here's ways that we need to address to improve our system and make it more subject to scrutiny.
Okay, so then we're going to be crystal clear of what the legislature needs to be doing before we get finished with you.
We certainly hope we can make it crystal clear.
Okay. We'll try. Questions?
Okay. And we have some clerks that now will talk about how it's gone in their own counties in this past election.
I'm sorry. I gave you your last chance.
I'll ask it to each of the clerks that comes up, Charlie, but one of the issues that I've heard people talk about is a sense of should we allow people other than the voter to carry their ballot in and drop it in a box? I mean, as a clerk, do you have a sense about that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I'd like to reframe that, if I may. I think the issue of security is an issue that we all have to look at. We need to look at it. You need to look at it. And I think that's an overriding issue that doesn't just talk about giving your ballot to someone else to drop for you. That is only one issue in that concept. And we've talked about that a lot in the last 2 days, the issue of security. And looking at that, the problem you have to address is how do you deal with the seniors who are not extremely mobile to be able to get their ballots to either to a mailbox or post office. They have caregivers maybe. You have neighbors in rural areas that are helping neighbors, you know, and bringing their ballots in. You have that window of time after it's too late to vote by mail because the mail it wouldn't get it to you in time. You have only one option, take it to a drop site. And are you going to say only the voter themselves can do that, but not have anybody else help them with that? So that it's a difficult problem how to cut that up and still provide that level of security you're concerned about. We have a bill introduced in the House that looks at that issue to some degree. We're addressing it from the issue of providing informed consumer information so that the consumer knows when they're dealing with official drop sites versus unofficial. And that was one of the concerns we heard coming out of Multnomah County and some other places where there were people collecting ballots and they had boxes and they were even next to the election center. But you had nothing to indicate, is that an elections person or not? And they weren't. And so we believe that the consumer needs to know, am I going to entrust my ballot with Joe Schmo or somebody you have no idea of, or do you want to say, no, I'm only going to provide it to an official ballot drop site? And so we believe that is an important consumer information piece, and we have a bill that looks at that. It's now in the House.
And the whole security, the whole box of security measures will be in your report also? Or
there will be some issues in that report addressing that. But again, that isn't the whole scope of it, because we feel we need to flesh it out more and look at it some more.
Okay. Well, I won't be able to sleep Wednesday night waiting for this. I'm
glad that this reading of this document will hold you in its grip.
I can't tell you.
Actually, it's interesting because with Oregon's vote by mail, it's required to be sealed and signed, and to that extent, that's a fairly substantial security measure. As long as there's some capacity on the part of clerks to judge whether or not that thing's been tampered with.
That's correct.
I mean, that it's been tampered with, that it somehow gets put aside. My concern about ballot security is that unofficial site, because, I mean, frankly, I wouldn't do this, but I can see evil minds setting up little ballot measure sites in my Democratic precinct, because I'm a Republican, and somehow not making it by 5 o'clock p.m. to deliver those ballots, because gosh gee whiz, there was an accident in the freeway, and somehow the thousands of ballots that I've collected in my Democrat precincts didn't make it. And there's no law that prohibits me. It's kind of like a fiduciary responsibility over that. It's a trusted responsibility I'm taking on. So there should be something, I think, as we look at this, to where somebody does set that up, if there is malfeasance in that respect, that there should be some
security. We need to look at that further. Okay.
Chair Harper and Senator Mannis, we are looking at that too. We too are concerned. But, you know, that applies not only to ballots but registration. And so because people collect registration cards and registration drives and then they get them to us after the deadline, you know, that's a problem too. So it's an overall issue that when you entrust something to someone else, you as a consumer need to think about it. And we believe we need to target a better education program around that.
Maybe this is, I don't know if this comes in the report or not. You've talked about it. I'm sorry, the Senate President called me out a little bit in ascertaining the intent of the voter. It seems to me that you get involved in that when they've plainly not followed the rules, the instructions on the ballot, or in some cases they tried to make the erasure. What deference do you give to the rules that are provided to the voter to follow? I mean, we're supposed to try to make excuses for people who just say, well, okay, I'm going to write this in the wrong place, and they'll know what I mean. I mean, should we reward that activity?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, Oregon doesn't address that in its statute. It merely says if you're unable to determine the intent of the voter, of the vote, you will not count the vote. So it's relying solely on intent. Did you complete the arrow? Did you fill in the oval? That's not addressed. You have to follow the instructions. There are states that have that law. But that is not the policy that this body has outlined for us to follow up to now.
Was the language determine the intent or clearly ascertain?
I believe it was determine the intent, but I'll be glad to go back and pull that slide again, and we could look.
If I recall, the Florida standard was a little higher than that.
It may be. I don't know.
Clearly ascertain should have eliminated all of the entertainment we saw during the post-election cycle, I would think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Clerks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Smith, Klamath County Clerk. And I want to share with you just a little bit of the Klamath County election, the November election. We mailed out over 37,000 ballots, and after we processed our undeliverables, we had an 80% turnout. The ballots in Klamath County this time consisted of two ballots for each voter, and so we got back 56,000 ballots that we were processing. So the inspection part of this process is what was very time-consuming, and our inspection boards worked on probably 5% maybe of the ballots that we got back were either duplicated or enhanced to the so that the machine would clearly read voter what the board had determined was a voter intent. I had them do a little research this morning on our presidential part because we are an optical scan county. Our election went very well, but it's not without its problems either, and it has we had overvotes in the presidential race of 0.4% and undervotes 0.8%. And that was a race that most people thought if anybody was going to vote in this election, president would be filled in. So on optical scan, punch card, whatever, there are these differences. We had about a 5% undeliverable rate this time. About 1,900 ballots came back to us in the middle of the election or that could not be delivered, and we processed those mostly after the election. The thing that really bottlenecked our office was on between the cutoff date for new registrations and election day, we had 828 update registrations. These were people that were registered either in our county or in another county that came in to change their address, and we had already mailed ballots out to them that were somewhere in the process of being returned to us or returned to us but not processed through, and we were then issuing new ballots to these people. So we had paid postage to mail them out, paid postage to get them back, and now processed a new ballot for them. If you had asked my staff on election evening how many we had processed on Monday and Tuesday, they would have said thousands. But the real count was 122 people we had in our office on Monday and Tuesday to fill out new registration cards that we had already mailed ballots out to that were an inactive or active voters somewhere in the state. Some of those were we had mailed out to from Klamath County. Other ones were we had to contact other counties in the state and see if they were registered voters there on either inactive or active status. And then those ballots were processed accordingly by tracking so that if we called Multnomah County, they were an active voter and a ballot had gone out to them, we would tag our ballot a notation on that voter's information so when a ballot came back to us, we would hold it until after the election, call Multnomah County and see if a ballot was processed there. If they were an inactive anywhere else in the state, it makes it a little bit easier because we know a ballot didn't get mailed to them. They're considered a registered voter, but a ballot would not have gone out if they were inactive, so we were able to just issue them a ballot in Klamath County. But we did have 122 of those just on Monday and Tuesday of election week. And if you can picture a line in your office going out 122 people long and staff is trying to process the ballots that have come in and we're in the processing stage here, that was a bottleneck in our office, although it wasn't, most of the people went away happy, which was what we wanted to do and let people vote. And so we didn't have to turn many people away for not being registered. And so that was, we thought that was an advantage once it was all said and done. It was not easy at the time, though. Security is one thing in my county that I felt very good about in the government center itself and where we process the ballots. I am going to look at my drop sites. I do have 9 drop sites around the county. They worked very well, and we received just half of our ballots that we got back in the entire election came back through our drop sites. So voters in Klamath County use the drop sites a lot. I had not one complaint on security or accessibility or anything of any of the drop sites. What I had more was requests for additional drop sites out in places. We did receive about a third of our ballots back on Monday and Tuesday of election week. So in addition to processing these people that were changing their registrations, we received about 10,000 ballots back on Monday and Tuesday in addition to what we had received the week before. So those are just some figures of where we stood in Klamath County. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good job, man.
Thank you.
This is a 20-day registration period with a lead time on vote by mail. Is that still a good number?
Mr. Chair, I do believe it is. It worked well for our county. We were able to from the numbers, it shows that we had a lot of people that did want to vote. Some of the people that vote only in presidential elections had not done the vote by mail before, and they would come in and say, well, yeah, I moved. I thought I could just go to my polling place, and I got out there, and it was closed, so they came to the office. So we were able to issue those people ballots, but there was still a cross-check so that it wasn't like a new registration, so we didn't have people flooding in from California or wherever and getting a trying to register and not being able to check that they were registered somewhere else also.
Senator Brown?
Would same-day registration, I know in Minnesota they have voters can register on the same day as Election Day, would that be, I'm seeing some groans in the back, would that be a total mechanical administrative nightmare?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, they will throw things at me if I answer this differently. We have talked about this at length at our conference, and the task force addressed it quite a bit also. We did not feel it was a good idea because the 21-day cutoff has worked well. All the offices in the state, I shouldn't say all, but most of them had a lot of people come in and update registrations. It gave people that were already registered somewhere in the state that had already shown an interest in to vote 21 days ahead of time. Hopefully most people knew that there was an election coming 20 days before the election. The numbers would be very hard to do on Election Day. We felt that the way that we did it now, it worked well, and we had very few people that came on Election Day and wanted to register and didn't know that they had to register ahead of time. So it was not a problem in most counties, and we would not like to see it go that direction.
Thanks.
You mentioned the issue of people updating their registration. We don't have a cutoff for updating registration, do we, other than the Election Day? So.
That's correct. They can update up until 8 p.m. on Election Day.
Right. I mean, I saw this problem in Multnomah County elections. There were lines of people coming in who were confused, late, wrong day, wrong city, something. I don't know why they were so confused. But should we have a cutoff to match the before? I mean, for instance, it costs you money to send these ballots out, and why not have a cutoff date just prior to mailing the ballots out?
I think the task force report on Thursday will address that. And we have
You're going to wait.
I will say our gut feeling is it would be wonderful to say 60 days ahead of time we don't want to do any changes because we mail our ballots out and we're done. Realistically, we know that we want to serve the voters and we don't think that would serve the voters.
How does it serve the voters or in a broader, grander scheme by making the thing so confusing that the volunteers that you brought in, the additional workers you brought in, can't keep up with the workload?
That is an issue. I agree with you that I think what most of us felt is that we are there to get the ballots out to as many people as we can that are legal registered voters that want to vote in that election, and that it's our job to administer it so that that happens. Right now it's the 21-day cutoff for new registrations, update until... It didn't not present a problem in most counties in that the lines were long. Staff was feeling very overwhelmed at times with the numbers of people at the counter. But we had to turn away very few people that were unhappy with the election process. And as we watched Florida proceed along on theirs, and we got lots of calls on their processes and things, it was one more step that we did not have to address that we were not letting people vote that wanted to.
Well, okay. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I mean, to me, if there's a cutoff, there's a cutoff, there's a cutoff. I mean, you can't keep... There's a point at which you've got to be able to make sure the data, the information that you have is at least reasonably accurate and that the staff that's been available is capable of doing the job.
Yeah, I think, Senator Minnis, the other part to me that, you know, we owe the voters a lot, but the voters owe us something, too. You know, they've got to follow the instructions, fill that correctly. I mean, it's a two-way street here that, you know, I think we miss that other part of the street. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How long are the ballots out prior to the election?
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, the military mailed out quite a bit ahead of time. 3 weeks ahead of time is when the normal ballots go out to most of the county residents.
Are you recommending that remain the time frame?
I believe that's addressed in the task force report also, but it seemed to work well for
most. Wednesday. I have to tell you.
I hate to give you all the information.
Oh, man.
It seemed to work well for most counties. We didn't have any problems getting them out in time and getting them back. It also gave time if a voter had a question on their ballot, time for them to call and make sure. Like in my county, a lot of people did not get a representative district on their ballot that they were expecting because they weren't in that representative district, but that's where all the advertising was done. And so they got the ballot. It gave them time to call, find out what district they're in, and that Pima County had more than one representative district. And we were able to clear up some things like that ahead of time. So the time frame seemed fine.
With respect to your...
Follow-up, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Commander. You mentioned that you had 9 drop sites, I believe. Can you describe for me the security associated with each of those drop sites?
Be glad to. Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, prior to the election, I had mailed out a drop site requirement sheet to each of the 8 drop sites, because one's a drive-up. And it lists the requirements for the drop site. It has at the bottom says, I understand the ballot drop site requirements as stated above and agree to having a ballot drop box in each of the places. We had them at the outline incorporated cities. We have 5 of those in our county. Had them at the library, have a drive-up one behind our building, one inside the building that is a basically inside postal one that is locked. You need a key to get in. And we had one at the senior center and one at the county fairgrounds this year. There were 2 additional ones that I put out at their request. The security basically is that it has to be locked and secure from being moved or tampered with or in view of authorized personnel and secure at all times. Personnel at each drop site shall not accept ballots prior to the ballot box being delivered. If overnight storage of ballots at the official site for ballot deposit is necessary, the depository shall be secured in a locked room or vault or other appropriate security measures taken. It varies a little bit from drop site depending on what their physical setup is. Mine on the outlying areas were not physically tied down, the boxes themselves. They were locked. They were not tied down, and that is something that I'm going to look into. I didn't have any complaints, but I do want to address it before something does happen.
If I might follow up, I heard that in other counties that some of those were not tied down, as you suggest. And were the ballots taken out of the boxes each day, or were they allowed to accumulate over time?
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, they were, depending on the site, so our outlying cities would call when they felt that it needed emptied. So they were not emptied every day. They were at night, though, locked in a back room of a locked building. The library one was emptied every day, 2-3 times a day, depending on, as it got closer to the election, it filled up very quickly. The senior center one also we emptied probably daily and 2 a day on Monday and Tuesday of election week.
And if I might, would the report that we get on Thursday indicate how many people use drop sites versus the mail?
Yeah, don't tell him.
Got to wait for the report now. I don't think that it addresses that in each county because some of the counties didn't really have places to put a lot of drop sites. They did not use a lot of drop sites, and they had it worked well for their county. My county, I had more requests, like I said, for additional drop sites. I don't know that that report addresses what each county had, but the counties I have talked to, I can think of 4 or 5 that said they probably had 50% of their ballots come back through the drop sites.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Miller. Thank you, Linda, very much.
Thank you.
Now you've taken everybody else's time.
Sorry.
Maybe we could have Georgette, Annette, Vicki, and John, Josephine Lane, Multnomah, and Clackamas. Maybe all come up together.
Chairman Harper, committee members, I'm Georgette Brown from Josephine County. I'm Annette Newingham from Lane County.
John Clark from Clackamas County.
Thank you.
Actually, I should defer most of my time to Annette and John because my story is very similar to Linda's. With same type of election equipment, we have 48,000 registered voters She has 37,000. I have fewer drop boxes, however. And that's because I don't have the secure places to have them. We all know the rules as far as having secure drop boxes. And the fact in Josephine County, I only have one incorporated city, and that's in Cave Junction with a recorder there. So I have a drop box there because it's in full view of the recorder, which I have deputized. And other than that, I have a drop box at the inside the courthouse where it's a 24-hour, like a mail deposit, and I'm now on the other side of the courthouse. So unfortunately, I did not have the drop boxes I would have liked to have had for this election. Consequently, my turnout was lower than statewide, and I really feel that it was because I didn't have the number of drop boxes. For all other elections, Josephine County has been higher than the state average. For this election, we were not. We only had a 76% turnout, which is not a bad turnout, but for this election, it was not a good one. And I really feel that it was because of my lack of drop sites throughout the county. I did have one of the representatives did pick up ballots out in the Murphy area, and I'm sure she did a very trustworthy job. It was only people who trusted her, who knew her, and the outside of our ballots do not have the party on them, so a person could give a ballot and no one would know if it's a Democrat or Republican because we had their name, their ID number, but there's no party indication. So, and then we did have the schools that asked if they could have unofficial drop sites. I put it out through the media that these were not our official drop sites. If anybody felt comfortable with the schools collecting the ballots, some of the school officials, it was okay, but they were not official, and they were not sanctioned by me at all, but I didn't disallow it because of the fact that I didn't have drop boxes in the outlying areas.
Is that something that you could allow or disallow? Is that under your purview? Did I understand that? You could have told the schools no, they can't do that?
I don't think I really could have told them no.
But they probably wouldn't have known the difference.
But they asked me if it was okay.
Yeah. But that's not anything that you know.
No.
The security measures, is that a Secretary of State? Where do those things come
well, from? Well, right in the statute it says they have to be secure, they have to be opened during a certain time, available to people on election day, yes.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So
next.
Right. Chair Harper, members of the committee. My county, Lane County, we counted actually 156,000 ballots at this last election. We had a very, very successful election. It was very labor-intensive, probably the most labor-intensive I can remember since 1992 when we had a presidential change at that time. We counted the most ballots we've counted ever in Lane County. We were at 82% turnout. I had 17 drop site locations, and we had about 50% of the ballots were returned by the drop locations. I feel it's very important to have drop locations, especially Lane County is a good example where we cover a great deal of territory. We go to the coast, Florence. We go all the way to Oak Ridge near the Cascades, down to Cottage Grove, and as far north as Cobourg. So we cover a large range of population. And it's not feasible for a lot of people at the last day to be able to cast their ballot at the clerk's office. We have a security agreement with all of our drop site locations, and they sign that for the ones that go into a building. We do have 6 drive-by locations, which are very, very popular. Some of the situations that we ran into went extremely smooth with very few problems. Last 2 days was probably the most problematic for us, but certainly not overwhelming or something we could handle. We knew we expected a very high outcome. We expected that with the presidential election. And we ended up having drop sites that needed to be picked up more frequently. That's something that in the last couple of days we assigned some additional staff, which all of them do an oath, by the way, and are our staff. We actually had them out collecting ballots the last couple of days to help ease the flow of traffic because so many people were using it. And also in front of our building, we had to do much the same thing because there was so much traffic and people coming in to do updating of registration. And also some people lost their ballots. Some people procrastinate. You're always going to get people who, for whatever reason, maybe they thought they had their ballot, but they didn't need to ask for another one. And sometimes people think, they just kind of don't think about it, and they realize they've moved, they didn't get a ballot, and they call you up, and then you get them to come in. Those were the people that would go to their old poll location and go vote, even though they'd moved in a poll election. So really, it was very positive, I felt, because what it did is it forced the voters to come into our office, and we were able to ask them the right questions. We have the training to do it. And find out that they moved, get them registered to the right location, and get them to vote the appropriate districts. And I think that was a very positive situation. There was also, Senator Miller brought up the question about duplications and single voters and different last names. And I would want to mention that in our county, we do several different things. We have three different methods of checking for duplicate voters prior to an election. And some of them are basic to, you know, just kind of everything being the same, and the system automatically catches that, and those are done on a weekly basis. And on a monthly basis, we go by last name and date of birth, and then quarterly, we do first name and date of birth. And let me tell you, it's not fun to do that, but that's how we catch the single person who doesn't, you know, uses the new name and may register in more than one location. And it's usually not an intent to defraud. In fact, I don't know that I remember any that were. It's usually they are excited about using a different name, I think, and just don't even think about that they're registered in another one. So we had a very successful election, but certainly we've learned a lot from this one, like we do on every election, and it's a dynamic process that we always have to have our minds open to figure out how to do it a better way. So, thanks.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I don't remember if Annette made this comment or not, but no. Both Lane County and Clackamas are among the two of the seven counties that are punch card counties. And I would agree with Annette that our election went very well, very smooth. We had 90% of our ballots counted by 4 o'clock the next morning. I would agree with the others that have spoken that about 50% of our ballots came in from the drop boxes. And I think it was back in 1995 when we started using drop boxes, and I started with our county libraries, the city libraries and county libraries, and they've worked very well for us. They have evening hours, weekend hours, so that voters can more easily get to them to drop their ballots off. We start the day the ballots are mailed out. We have 16 of those locations, including three county libraries. One of them's up on Mount Hood at Welch's. And I work with the library, so the library staff, we provide two drop boxes that are locked very first day, and we have a regular schedule of picking the boxes up. We pick up the entire box. We don't empty the box, you know, at the library. And if a box gets full before a scheduled pickup, they have a box to replace. And put the full one back in a secure location and give us a call. In spite of our having a regular schedule of pickups, I saved some time to go out and do some of that myself. And, I'd like to say that it's because people do recognize me, but there are plenty of times when I am walking back from the library to my pickup carrying a locked, you know, full ballot box, and people see me and, you know, walking in with their ballots and just give them to me. I know they can trust me, and I'm sure that's because they do recognize that I am their county clerk. But
sure.
One thing that I wanted to comment on that in the display that Charles gave you about the kind of notations that people make, we often have with our punch card ballots. You know, we send out a booklet or a format that contains the candidate names with the numbers and the measure information, and it is not a voter-friendly system. You have to go from your booklet, find the number that represents the yes vote, then go to the punch card and punch that hole out. But we often have people sending back not only the ballot, but their format booklet, and there may be no marks on the punch card, and, you know, yeses and noes circled on the format. I had a voter call from California who had an absentee ballot and it did not receive the punch card. So I said, just make your notations on the format and send that back to us. But again, I think the system worked very well for us.
Excuse me, why don't I ask you? You're here. Your chair, you're here. Why don't you ask? You're afraid to ask.
Why didn't I think of that? You haven't met Senator Courtney. Pass up the opportunity. The proposal floating to force the counties that have punch card now to change their systems. What's comments on that? You first.
Well, I would say that we have wanted to do something different. We recognize that the punch cards are not very voter friendly compared with what you see from the other counties. In Clackamas County, over the last 3 years, we've converted our voter registration election management system to a new computer system, and I chose to wait until we finished that process before doing something new. We're wanting to do it. I've talked to my county commissioners. They're in agreement. We're going to kind of wait and see now. You know, we don't know whether the Congress or maybe our legislature, maybe you folks will, you know, determine standards that need to be changed or something that might impact the kind of software and hardware that would be used. Vendors, I think, are chomping at the bit to come visit us with new and wonderful ideas, and we want to, you know, we don't want to jump out there and buy something that may be obsolete. The optical scan ballots, are better in terms of being voter friendly, but in terms of having to make sure that the voter's vote has been read by the computer, I think what you saw from Charles' display is that us election officials do have to make sure that the voter intent is read by the computer.
We are looking at the options that are available to us. Certainly we acknowledge from in Lane County that the voter friendliness part of it is an issue, and if there's things we can do to make that better, I think it's a good idea. There are some concerns. One is certainly we need to look at the money, because there's been a little bit of misleading information dealing with that. I think I saw a figure of $300,000 to change all the punch card counties statewide. Well, we've looked at maybe $500,000 just Lane County to go to optical scan. So getting the right information. It's about $50,000 for every counting machine, and it is slower. An example is we might have, at this last election, very likely would have had to have two ballots. So if I had 156,000 ballots to count, I would have had twice as many to count, which would have slowed that process down. So there's some issues there. And then I need more space, because I don't have enough space in my elections division right now. So I would have to move to be able to accommodate having the space for the additional counting machines to be able to add the staff. That's not to say that we can't do it. We certainly want to look at those options, and we're already exploring the space issues, the funding issues, whether it's going to come from the federal government, the state, or where. But those are all questions that have to be answered. And then finding the right system that's going to take us into the future and not just on a short-term basis and become obsolete like where we are right now. So there's some very difficult decision-making, but we are aggressively looking towards that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Friedrich, appreciate you coming in. Did we get the Vicki Irvin moment? She didn't. Okay. You got afraid early? Okay. Well, I hope she gets better. Democrat Party and the Republican Party. Maybe if you both could come up.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Brown.
We'll see to what extent this Kumbaya session has extended into party politics.
Just for a second.
Would you like me to sit on the left or
left? I want you on the left.
Who's coming forward now? Is it both are coming forward? Okay. This is going to be really good. We go alphabetically.
I think we're first.
Okay. Who has first?
I think they've agreed who's going to go first, Mr. Chair.
So they've been
negotiating.
You guys want to wrestle?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We decided that that winner shoots first.
We all go there.
You're not going to get the song if you keep that up.
Well, first, I'd like to acknowledge the hard work and outstanding performance of all of our county clerks. Under extraordinary circumstances, these dedicated public servants performed with tremendous grace under pressure, and all of our citizens should be proud and appreciative of their efforts.
Introduce yourself.
I apologize. I'm Neil Pender. I'm the executive director of the Democratic Party of Oregon. Would you like me to begin again?
No, please.
Okay, thank you. And we also can be very proud of Oregon's first vote-by-mail election in a general election. However, the results of the 2000 election, as we know, were not all admirable. The contested presidential election results in Florida cast an unfavorable light on our election processes. As the greatest and longest enduring democracy in the history of the world, we should all be ashamed of the voting irregularities that surfaced in this election. We must act immediately to enhance protections of voter franchise. To ignore the importance of such action would further erode public confidence in the integrity of our elections, undermining the most fundamental principles of our democracy. The closeness of this election reminded voters that every vote can make a difference, but its outcome reinforced the profound apathy of the disenfranchised that believe not every vote truly counts. As the Democratic Party of Oregon looks forward to working with the Secretary of State, Bill Bradbury, and this committee and the legislature to ensure Oregon's elections remain among the cleanest and fairest anywhere. And I think this is a great issue. Election reform is a great issue that there can be a lot of bipartisan support. My colleague, Daryl Howard, to my right, agree on a lot of things, and one of our highest priorities of this legislative session is implementation of a statewide centralized voter file. And I think it's important to separate out the analysis of this election and election reform from the success of vote by mail. Many of the issues that were raised in the period while the votes were being tabulated had more to do with voter registration questions than they did the performance of vote by mail. And a statewide centralized voter file would allow, in essence, one-stop shopping. It's important for the counties to be empowered to protect voter franchise at a local level, but it is equally important that there is some centralization at a statewide level. And this has practical implications, one of which is from a campaign perspective and a party perspective, you are able to access information as it comes in immediately from a county clerk's. It enhances the cross-checking in a more timely fashion, an immediate fashion, to eliminate duplication of ballots, which is obviously critical if we want to ensure one man or woman and one vote. And the voters have a real benefit. A centralized voter file is inside baseball, I recognize, to most voters, but there is a benefit to the voters. One of the most common complaints that we get from the campaign level is from voters who received communication after they have already cast their ballot. And we're sensitive to that. It's a nuisance to the voter, and frankly, it's unnecessary and inefficient use of campaign resources. So a statewide voter file will allow us to remove those voters from our contact list immediately upon the system being updated. And that's a tremendous resource not only to the public but to campaigns as well. We would also like to take a hard look at considering having postage paid on the ballot return envelopes. This became apparent to us because as in Oregon, as we have an ever lengthening ballot, again, not a standardized ballot from county to county, it required different rates of postage depending on the county you're in. And in most cases, this variance was inadequately addressed in the distribution of ballots, which created significant voter confusion. So one of the areas that I think that because of this confusion, it yielded more pressure on placing the ballots in the drop box. We talked about 50% in many counties were put in the drop box. But if we have saved as much money that we have by converting to an all-vote-by-mail system, cost should not be the only function that we must keep focus on the integrity of our elections, and that it seems reasonable to us to include a postage paid return envelope with each ballot. The next third priority we would like to look at is elimination of the punch card ballot, as we have learned so much about. Any future debating about the meaning or interpretation of a CHAD just simply can't be tolerated. I mean, the fact that tens of thousands of ballots were disregarded in Florida is unconscionable. I mean, those are people who I think in many cases believe that they did the right thing. And we put not only those voters, we disenfranchised their efforts, but we also put our election officials in a position of trying to determine the intent, which is going to create dispute depending on what your interpretation is. So we have to recognize that ugly light could have easily been cast on Oregon as it was on Florida, and we should take steps to change that. And in fact, Oregon's vote-by-mail system is much better suited for the optical scan. You know, you don't have styluses handed out with each ballot. And because with the inordinate number of ballot initiatives, it allows voters to understand exactly what they're voting on and to fill in the corresponding dots. Fourth, standardized ballots. Again, this helps to diminish the amount of discerning voter intent. The more standardized the ballots, the more uniform that they are, I think that the clearer the instructions are to the voter, so you have fewer opportunities for voters to mark their ballots incorrectly. And then finally, we would like to move to strengthen financial disclosure requirements. The public is I think it's an understatement, concerned about the influence of special interest in our elections, yet we've done very little to incorporate the modern technology available to allow for more immediate disclosure. This issue is fundamental to restoring public confidence in our elected officials at all levels of government. And frankly, voters deserve the right to know who is funding candidates and campaigns and ballot measures before they vote, not after. And that's frequently the case under our current law. And because the candidate ballot is intermingled with ballot measures, disclosure requirements are important for both. You know, increasingly we have out-of-state interests involved in Oregon's elections, and it would only take a single unethical campaign. We've been very lucky so far, but it would only take a single unethical campaign to undermine an election up and down the ballot, not just for that one particular issue. So, as such, we would support efforts to, or are interested in supporting efforts to require financial disclosure of initiative campaigns beginning when the measure is certified and the campaigns begin collecting signatures. Because we feel, and this is in response to the public's weariness of being asked to sign ballot measure petitions.
You know, excuse me, that's a whole separate topic. We dealt with that last week, and we'll deal with that in the future. So, voting stuff, yeah. I got it.
Okay.
That's an issue that we're handling in a separate forum.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Well, and to conclude, I think it's also important as we look to reform that we don't have a knee-jerk reaction to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And we as a party are certainly going to vehemently oppose any measures that yield in an overt or subtle way voter suppression, voter intimidation, or reduce voter participation in general. We certainly believe that we, in many ways, had success through vote by mail and increasing turnout. We had amongst the highest in the country with 80%+ turnout. However, we should be concerned that we have a disturbing trend that we only have 60% of our eligible voters voting. And further measures to restrict voters' abilities to either register, you know, the fact that people were able to register up until 8 p.m. election day is because that's the law, and they were already currently registered. They were only updating their registration.